People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the preview show of Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. My name is Marcus Speller.
My name is Jim Campbell.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm rooting tooting Pete Donaldson.
Well, hello, everybody. What a show we've got for you today. It's Friday, yeah. Da, 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 da. Hope you're all doing fantastically well. Gentlemen, the last couple of days, I've been consumed with this thing that people have been trying to create for themselves. Your best 11 that you've seen play on the telly or in your sort of generation or generations of football, where you can't choose the same player, you can't choose a player from the same country or have played for the same club, even if they played for the same club in different eras. It's been driving me mad, damn it all. But I think I've got my team, and I think I'll probably release it on those social medias later on in the day to keep everybody on tenterhooks.
Thank you.
Peter, have you had a chance?
I like that you're starting the show with basically you telling us all about what you're going to be doing on social media later today. Very, very enjoyable. I started, but to be honest, Marcus, it was like formulas and figures and graphs started appearing in my head. I needed to sit down. It's impossible, Marcus. I don't know how you managed to do it, mate.
I would say, Peter, they've all played for Newcastle United. Oh, dearie me. Gentlemen, Luke and Jim, I hope you're doing very well too. Luke, you keeping all right?
Yeah, well, very well, thank you, mate. And I have so far resisted that said social media challenge, which I believe might have been started by Jamie Carragher. I might, in fact, indulge myself tomorrow and release it as well. I completely misunderstood it at first because Charlie, our social media and general production guy, said, can you help me with this? Can you pick a forward? And straight away I was like, well, Goran Pandev, he's played for Macedonia. There's no other players. And then Marcus, you were like, well, no, yeah, but he played for Inter and so is every other player ever. So yeah. it's actually a lot harder than it looks at first glance, particularly if they're not that quick on the uptake like me. But I'll give it a go this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. For a moment, I thought I'd missed a memo there and that we were starting the show with our teams. And I was like, whoa, well, I'm going to have to pull out some pretty good improv skills right now.
It's remarkable how many top players played for Inter and obviously Barcelona. You can't have Cristiano Ronaldo in there. It's just not possible because he's played for Manchester United, Juventus, Real Madrid, of course. You can't do it. If you put him in there, it wipes out so many players. So Ronaldo is out, but Messi's in there. Get Messi in there. Now, gentlemen, first things first, and I'm going to come back to you on this one, Pete Donaldson. Are we actually about to see Mike Ashley sell Newcastle United?
Yeah. I mean, it's very Newcastle that Mike Ashley looks like he's cashed his chips in at a time where people can't go out and get riotously drunk.
They can, just on their own.
They can, but they can on their own only. But it seems to be happening and it's weird and scary.
Yeah. Well, for those who haven't seen this, and what on earth are you doing? Because it is some sort of football news. There's a consortium which is mainly made up of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. Of course, Amanda Staveley, we've heard her name a few times before. and a couple of chaps, the Rubin brothers, who are UK-based. I think one of them's involved in Queen's Park Rangers. So they're now undergoing the mandatory Premier League background checks, and there doesn't seem to be any concerns over Saudi Arabia's human rights record in this proposed sort of roughly £300 million deal. So we're waiting for the Premier League to ratify the deal. Luke, do you have concerns over the people that could ultimately control Newcastle United? Are you one of those ones who just thinks, ah, all money's dirty these days?
That's a good question. I think that it is interesting that people have been desperate for Mike Ashley to leave Newcastle United for as long as we can all remember. It looks like the people they're going to be replacing him are objectively probably worse. But that's not to say that that there isn't Saudi money awash all over the UK economy, as far as I understand it. Not an economist, not an expert in this area of the world, but as far as I understand, that is the case. And so one of the arguments has been, well, why are you drawing the line with Newcastle United now? And that's chiefly been said by a lot of Newcastle United fans. And I think the answer and the rebuttal to that is, well, just because there's loads of bad stuff around doesn't mean we want more bad stuff, if you can boil it down to that level. But there's a really interesting aspect of the deal where Ashley's clearly looking to move the club on because it feels like an opportunity time to do so, and he's a businessman at heart, I suppose. There was a fascinating article in The Athletic this week, which I share with you guys. It's quite long, so I'm not sure if you had a chance to read it yet, but do that if you haven't. It's really interesting about how Mike Ashley likes to operate, how there's a feeling that part of the reason he's been so badly received and he's perceived to have done such a poor job is because he hasn't been dedicating the time that is needed to make the club a success.
Perceived.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. I mean, you understand what I mean. Some people will defend him, won't they? I'm not one of those people, but some people will. So it's an interesting situation. I wouldn't like to see further Saudi money come into football, and I wouldn't like to see Newcastle used as a venue for sort of sports washing ill-gotten gains, if you consider them to be ill-gotten. But, I mean, there's not really an awful lot any of us can do about that. It's almost certainly, if they agree to do the deal, it's almost certainly going to be ratified and go through. So I imagine it will happen. Pete, I suppose you've probably got some fairly robust opinions on this. But out of interest, just to you as a Newcastle fan, you go from an owner, Mike Ashley, who people don't like for perfectly understandable reasons, and you move to someone or a group of people who are probably objectively worse. I mean, how does that make you feel as a fan?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this when the Saudi connection was revealed probably this time last year. Will having this owner, and it isn't, was an 80% stake, something like that, will it affect my relationship with Newcastle United? Yeah, undoubtedly. Am I disappointed that a lot of Newcastle fans don't seem to give a shit? Yes, massively, undoubtedly. But you sort of think, well, it kind of brings me back to my point that I made either on Monday or last Thursday. Like, should the fit and proper person test have a clause for owning a bone saw and chopping up journalists and bombing markets in Yemen? I think that should probably be in there as part of it. But if, you know, we're about to hit an era-defining recession. So if you think there isn't going to be money flooding in from the Gulf, from the Uyghur imprisoning Chinese Communist Party, I think you're a little bit naive. The Premier League have to show some leadership here. They're not going to. They've got the data from Amnesty International. They're not going to get involved. The UAE involved in the bombing, the twin bombing with the Saudis of Yemen, you know, the rape and the pillaging and the murder and the bombing of that particular part of the world. And football is already dripping in Emirates sponsorship. So the horse bolted a long, long time ago. Mm. The Premier League were happy to let it bolt. So am I clutching my pearls right now that Newcastle United will be under Saudi ownership? No, I'm not. Will it affect my relationship with Newcastle United? Yes, it will. Will it make me fall out of love with Newcastle United? Possibly. I just don't know. But at the moment, I don't understand. It seems like the same journalists who are criticizing Newcastle United fans for wanting too much out of Mike Ashley are the same ones that are suddenly flipping on the coin and criticizing them for preparing their headdress for the next time Newcastle play at the fucking St. James's Park. It's a murky, horrible situation.
Jim, what have you got to do to fail the fit and proper persons test in the Premier League?
Well, this is kind of what I was about to go on to, because I think Pete raises a really interesting point in there that, you know, if if the Premier League aren't going to stand up to these sort of owners, then, you know, why is it suddenly on the fans? You know, there's a lot of talk of like, well, you know, City fans get criticised quite a lot, obviously, for you know, the owners of their club, and you see it a lot, and it's happening with Newcastle. Now, it doesn't seem to happen so much with Sheffield United. We know that the Saudis own the Blades. and I just think Pete's right on that. You know, if it's up to the Premier League to stand up to that sort of thing, if they're going to have a fit and proper person's test, if they're going to claim to care about that sort of thing, it shouldn't just be that these owners aren't incompetent businessmen. It should be that they don't come with this sort of huge, disgusting, like, whatever way you slice it, immoral baggage. And it's already here, isn't it? We can't really have a problem with it more than we already have a problem with it, because it's already happening. And that is sad, but it's just unfortunately how it is. I would like that to change. I don't know what we do about it from sat here in our makeshift podcast studios, or what any fan can do to affect it. But it is a really unfortunate side of, I suppose, of late stage capitalism. It's just a symptom of that. And football is obviously probably the most inflated form of entertainment that is affected by that.
Can I just jump in really, really quickly and just say that one thing that is important to point out, and Jim's really, really spot on to raise the idea of Sheffield United, something that I didn't consider. I completely forgot about that. Excuse me. But one thing I think is really important, it's a really important distinction to draw, is that, and I might incur the wrath of Newcastle United fans by saying this, and Pete Donaldson will be front and centre of that if I do, is that, let's get it absolutely right. Newcastle United fans are not protesting or complaining, largely speaking, about Mike Ashley because he employs Sports Direct employees on 0 hours contracts and behaves in business the way he behaves. They're complaining about Mike Ashley because he's not investing in the team, and because he's not hiring the manager they want, and because they're not achieving what they think they can achieve with the size of club they are. And the reason that's a really important point to make is because football fans will almost invariably put their club front and centre to everything. So the way that the Saudi Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia and the Rubin brothers or whatever, if indeed they take over Newcastle United, can just get easy PR wins over Newcastle United fans, the same way Manchester City's owners got with PR wins over Manchester City fans, is by doing things like linking themselves to Max Allegri as a new manager, or buying a big signing, or going out and buying four or five players, or investing money that hasn't been invested in the training ground or the facilities at Newcastle United for years and years and years. That's the way you win football fans over. And if we're going to talk about public consciousness of immorality when it comes to investment in football, football fans, not just in Newcastle, but the world over really, particularly the country over here, have shown time and time again that unfortunately, when it comes to having a bit of awareness around where the money comes from, they simply do not care. They do not care as long as their football club is being funded and as long as the success for them on the pitch. That's all they care about. So I don't expect there to be any long-term protest against this ownership at all as soon as the business is done on the pitch, because that's how football works and that's what football fans are like. And it's sad to see, but that's how it is.
But also, Luke, you've got to say that they also have no say in who Mike Ashley sells it to. They have no say in how their football club is run. So it only becomes, you know, there's a reason why Roman Abramovich, does he have a UK visa anymore? You know, once the government start getting a bit spicy with the Russians and start you know, questioning where everyone's money starts comes from, things only start to move because there's a crackdown on a particular sector, and that's just to rub somebody up the wrong way. It's not an actual. They don't really care where the fucking money's coming from. You remember a couple of years ago when MBS was in London and he was and he'd paid for all his mad posters on the side of trucks and they were being driven around the town, because obviously there was a bit of a furore about him visiting Theresa May and the Queen, and they were bringing out the red carpet for him and stuff. Mohammed bin Salman and near my house, there was just a load of these weird trucks where there was just a picture of him and it said, he's modernising Saudi Arabia. I'm going, well, this has very limited, impact on my life. But turns out, 2 years later, big impact on my life.
I think what is so frustrating about this sort of thing is that football is a pretty unique thing in the way supporters engage with it, because it is a tribal thing, isn't it? You're not just going to change the club you support. You're not just going to stop watching the game, are you? these people know that, and they're piggybacking on top of that, and it's so frustrating because we see it. You know, it might be by the sounds of it, it's already starting to happen with some Newcastle fans. We've seen it with some City fans as well, where you know they just feel their owners are beyond reproach because of the things they do in the community, and as Luke points out, the money they've spent and the effective PR job that they do on making it look like they're not like the other guys, and the whole well, actually they do a lot for the area, blah 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 sort of thing, and it is all sports washing, and it's frustrating.
It is, and you're right to make the point, sort of, Luke, as you made about football fans ultimately just care about football, and I understand that because you know part of me sort of almost like wants to move the conversation and go, but what about those odds that Max Allegri, you know, taking over at Newcastle have been slashed? That's exactly the point. I sort of suddenly want to go, anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about what may happen on the pitch, and that's what will happen. Mm. That's how it works.
Well, we make a football show here. So although we can talk about the big stories in football and maybe address some of the points that we feel passionate about, ultimately we're to talk about football. That's hard at the moment because there is no football. But I don't think we have to defend ourselves by saying, look, let's go talk about football now. That's really what we're here to do. I think as long as the points are made and we talk about how we feel about it, I think that's perfectly acceptable. But I know what you mean. It feels a bit trivial after the conversations we've had. But just to Jim's point, very, very briefly before we move on, I don't know if I fully agree with the idea that people aren't going to stop supporting their club or people aren't going to stop watching football. I know plenty of people of my age and perhaps slightly a bit older who have fallen out of love with football for lots of different reasons. This would be one of them. This kind of idea of the increased amount of wealth in football, I think certainly would be one of them. But I absolutely can see that nowhere near in enough numbers to markedly affect the game is going to happen. But the point being, of course, that's the very essence of this, isn't it? The very essence of this is they know, people who prospectively invest in football clubs at the top level here know that the strong, dedicated fan base, which is, I mean, it's essentially a love that's never going to dwindle really in big numbers, despite what I've just said. It's unconditional love, is a massive cause of attraction for them. So that's part of the reason it happens in the first place. So it is disappointing, but I mean, this is the environment that we work in now, and we have to just be realistic about that because there's not really an awful lot we can do at this level to change it.
And look, if anyone can mess up a multi-billion-dollar football investment, it could be Newcastle United. So,
absolutely.
So yeah. It might all go to shit. They might leave after a couple of years and going, sorry, the books are mad. We're off.
Whatever happens, though, if this takeover does indeed happen, then one person who will be worse off will probably be old Stevie Bruce. Because the odds of Max Allegri taking over have been slashed. I would be surprised if he went there, to be perfectly honest with you. But we know Amanda Staveley loves old Rafa Benitez, so we could see him back if the takeover happens. Again, I'd be probably slightly surprised to see that. So poor old Steve Bruce. Did you see that Sam Allardyce came running to Steve Bruce's defence recently?
Oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, Allardyce said, Pete, see if you agree with just fact check this for me for a sec, would you? Steve is a very, very good Premier League manager of a great high quality, irrespective of what the media might say, and he knows how to put a club in a position and move forward.
I mean, my main problem with Steve Bruce is the fact that the media definitely love him. So the media, you know, the media are on his side in many ways, I would say.
Yeah, Allardyce said a few more things about his time at Newcastle when Mike Ashley came in and Allardyce was sacked and so on and so forth. And I thought to myself, I wonder why Allardyce is kind of going on and on about this. And then he got to the point. He got to the crux of what he wanted to say by saying, I still don't understand why Rafa Benitez was deemed to be so good. I just don't understand it because Newcastle played such negative football then. Not now, then. It was unbelievable. But there you go. Rafa did a great PR job in himself and how he managed that club at the time.
The key word is there is, I still don't understand. It's not that Rafa Benitez didn't do a good job, is it? It's just that Allardyce has got his head up his arse at all times.
Didn't Benitez move? Well, he was sacked by Real Madrid, but ultimately his career, he went from Real Madrid to Newcastle, and then when Newcastle went down, he stayed in the Championship and took them back up. I mean, that is going to endear you to supporters. Like, there's no two ways about it. And Rafa Benitez, where they finished in the league, the football might not have been scintillating, but is it now?
He hates that man for some weird reason.
Marcus, that Athletic article I referred to earlier is actually interesting in that it doesn't explicitly say this, but it alludes to the idea that, because Benitez features in it quite a lot, and it alludes to the idea that he's not really a what they call a clubbable man, where he's not the kind of Sam Allardyce, Stevie Bruce, let's all get around and have a beer, let's have a bit of banter between us type chap. And I think that older English managers, well, British managers, I suppose, will accept a foreign manager into their thing if they're a bit like that, if they're a bit like them. But Benitez has never been like that. So I think that's why he gets on the end of a load of criticism from other people in the game of around his age or a bit older, like your Sam Allardyce. Even though Sam Allardyce has in the past played football exactly like Rafa Benitez has played, I don't say he always does it, but he has done it. So it's not shocking to me that he's shown lack of self-awareness there, but that's a little bit of information as to why potentially Benitez isn't as popular among a lot of these pundits of that kind of profile.
Yeah. It's just a big boys club, isn't it? But there is an element of that idea that, like, you sense an insecurity from Allardyce about that, this whole thing saying, I don't understand it, this sense that, you know, if someone comes over from abroad with their, you know, methodical ideas and they're keeping themselves to themselves and them not treating it all like a big bloody laugh, then there's something to fear, you know, like it's going to change the fabric of the game and of society. Shut up, Sam.
Well, speaking of older British people spouting off in football, have you seen that Paul Pogba retorted to Graham Souness?
And I love this.
And Souness bit back. Yeah, Pogba was asked what he thought of Graham Souness' ongoing comments about him. And old Pogba said, this comment is slightly confusing. He said, I didn't even know who Souness was. I heard he was a great player and stuff like that. I don't know the face, but the name I know. So he says he didn't know him, but he sort of does know him. But okay, I think we get the picture that he's not bothered by Graham Souness in the slightest. But Souness, did you see this? He had a sort of a video link up with Jamie Carragher and David Jones, and Souness loved it. He absolutely relished these comments when chatting to them. And Souness responded with a big grin on his face. I'm happy with it. The oldest thing in football comes to mind. Put your medals on the table, and I've got a big table.
See, I have to say, like, I think this is embarrassing from Souness. Like, really, really embarrassing. Paul Pogba will be absolutely howling at this. I think that this is another strange thing about football as a career, because a lot of the time you get people that, when they finish football and they become pundits or whatever, they're still revered for things they did like 30, 40 years ago in some cases. And like, it's irrelevant. I just think what Souness won with Liverpool is irrelevant to Paul Pogba. Why should he care? Like, it just means absolutely nothing to him.
I think unfortunately there is something lost in this because of Souness's reaction. But Souness, he's a bit like, you know, a forerunner to someone like Roy Keane. Out and out winner.
I'm not doubting how good he was, Marcus. I'm saying how good he was is irrelevant in 2020.
But I think it is relevant with some of the points Souness is making. Souness is not annoyed with Pogba's ability. He's annoyed at the application of the ability, which he's perfectly entitled to be. And if you think about Souness as the player, which one must when analysing Souness's comments on this, Tony Evans wrote a piece in The Independent about the time when Liverpool were up against, was it Steaua Bucharest? I forget now. Forgive me if that's wrong, but it was certainly a side in that part of Europe, which was, you know, in those days, very far away and not many people knew about the players that were coming from certain countries and so on, lack of media, blah, blah, blah. And Souness, one of the Steaua players was chipping away and actually, like, almost sort of punching some of the Liverpool players behind the referee's back. So Souness chinned him. And I think might have done quite a bit of damage. So in the second leg, when they go away to Romania or wherever it was, Souness turns up. The whole town is waiting for Souness, booing him, chucking stuff at him, going mental. The player said Souness absolutely loved it, rose to the occasion, didn't shrink, played well, and Liverpool won. You know, that's the type of man he is. And he applied his talent to the absolute maximum. He was an iron fist in a velvet glove, was old Souness when he played. And he sees someone like Paul Pogba now, in his opinion, not making the most of his talent, not taking it seriously, blah, 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 blah. And he just cannot fathom that. He thinks, you're such a good player, blah, 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 blah. I understand it is a bit embarrassing. I understand he's far too deep in now. But I think the core sort of point that he's trying to make is valid.
I think this is it. You hit the nail on the head there, Marcus, saying he's far too deep in now. He's made it really personal, hasn't he?
Yeah, so
it's
got Graham Linehan.
Sounds like an old man shouting at a cloud. Like, it's just, yeah, full Graham Linehan. Absolutely, yeah. What is it with Graham's lately?
On that, though, just to jump in, like on the Souness side of it, he's got, I mean, we talked about it, didn't we? I think it might be earlier this season. I don't know, perhaps it was the back end of last season, about how Graham needs to understand how it looks for an older white guy to continually criticize a younger black guy and to perhaps be perceived to hold that younger black guy up to a standard he wouldn't hold other players up to, and what that looks like. And we talked about that. And but aside from that, I think that the thing with Souness, and he's got a fantastic reputation, by the way, in the industry, hasn't he? People think he's a lovely fellow. He's always really nice, very respectful. Marcus, I know you've had interactions with him before and found him, have found it to be positive. So I'm not, no one's suggesting that he's, you know, he's a terrible human being or whatever, but ultimately at his essence, he's a competitor, isn't he?
Yeah.
So he the one thing that does, I think, dog players of great quality many, many years ago is that they can never quite replicate what that was like as a player, and they treat the job they do, whether it be punditry or, you know, running the post office as we talked about last week or whatever, they probably want to be the best they can at it, and they want to be right amongst it. And I think this is probably a vehicle for Graham to replicate this competition that he had as a player. And that's why he's loving it. So when Marcus, when you said, I mean, I saw the video as well, when you said, oh, when he's told about that, he loves it. Of course he loves it, because it's all a sparring competition for him. It's all it's all about getting one over on someone else, and he can't do that as a player now. So he's doing it by talking about his medals. I mean, what could happen, of course, Graham Smith was a brilliant player, he won everything in the game at club level, let's not forget that. But what could happen, of course, is Graham could put all his medals on the table, and then Paul Pogba could just smash the table with a World Cup trophy, and then we could all just agree to call the whole thing off.
And he would also dab.
Yeah,
he would
what, Graham, dab, I think so.
Like his life depended on it.
Oh dear. Well, gentlemen, speaking of medals, today we're told that there's going to be a meeting of all the Premier League clubs to try and make further progress on what to do for the rest of the season. And there's chat that the season could be finished by 30th of June with player contracts in mind, although some suggest that as long as the season is underway before 30th of June, then players could be given short-term extensions or decide to drop out after their contract expires. Luke, are we going to see medals at the end of the season, do you reckon?
Again, I don't think anyone really knows, and I think it's painfully unfair that you've asked me that. No, I'm joking. The meeting is, as we understand, it's happening right now. So we'll give a bit of coverage on that on Monday. Get a long run up at it, find out what all the informed people are saying, and then kind of use their opinions as our own. But at the moment, we don't know what's going on. The key thing is, though, I think that there's a lot of concern among clubs in the Premier League that as things stand, they really want to finish the season by the 30th of June because of the issues you've mentioned, Marcus, of player contract. David Ornstein was talking a while back, might have been earlier this week, about this idea that certain groups of players at certain top clubs have not been able to agree a wage cut or a wage deferral, and it's looking like they might each have to discuss their wage situation individually with the club through their agents, which of course is going to take absolutely ages. Now, there are some clubs that have sorted it already and that have agreed in principle deferrals or whatever it may be, but some clubs haven't. This is an admin nightmare for everyone concerned, and a lot of these questions need to be answered before they can work out what they're going to do with the season. And as we keep saying, because it really is, this really is the case, this is completely unprecedented, and people are trying to come up with creative solutions to work it out in a way that suits everyone. But they're not going to be able to suit everyone. I mean, you're probably going to come on in a minute, Marcus, to talk about what's happened in Scotland. That doesn't suit everyone, you know, because there's no solution that does. I mean, Pete, what would you like to see happen now with the season? Would you like to see it sort of finish as soon as possible, or do you think there's another way to go about it?
I don't see there any way of making any concrete decisions even today. What are we, 16th of
17th of today, I think.
17th
yeah.
of April. I'm such a yesterday's guy. but I think I mentioned WhatsApp to you yesterday. I genuinely think the best course of action would be take from August until, you know, next April to finish all of the fixtures that need to be finished behind closed doors or however they decide to do it. just completely, let's say furlough, just cancel the 2021 season, and then figure out, because no doubt if there's no vaccine found, there is going to be a resurgence of COVID-19 in sort of December, January time all around the world, and we'll be in the same situation. So I think they should just use the rest of next season to finish all of the fixtures they've already got to get rid of, get rid of next season, and we start again with the Euros as planned. That's my idea. I don't think anyone's going to go for it, but I think to make any decision now when we haven't flattened our own curve, or we haven't even got together all of our statistics wherever we are, I think is churlish and silly, quite frankly.
Just to come back on that very quickly, if I may, we talked about this on the Continent as well. You've got people, you've got Tebas in Spain, and you've got the authorities and football authorities in Germany and France trying to work out what's best to do. But all at the same time, even if they're not saying it explicitly, they know they're completely at the mercy of what the wider authorities in the country want to do. So, for example, if you see in Germany, they start training again in groups of two or five, and they do it in a way that follows all the hygiene regulations. They're not using the dressing rooms, they're not using the showers, but they are training. And then what happens? Well, the German authorities come out and say, well, no mass gatherings are going to be possible now till August the 30th or something at the earliest, or August the 31st at the earliest, which completely undermines what they're trying to do. That means they have to then adjust again to work out whether they can play the games behind closed doors, and what constitutes a large gathering, etc., etc. And what I think what Pete's alluding to there, which is what I agree with, is that the football, like any other industry, is at the mercy of this virus, at the mercy of what governmental authorities want to do at the very top level, and it can't operate outside of that. And I think that's been hard for football, because football is used to kind of doing what it wants, and it can't. So until all those questions that Pete's mentioned have been answered, very, very difficult to see what constitutes a solution here. And very quickly, finally, in Portugal, I believe players' contracts roll on naturally as is, unless something changes, even if they expire. I don't know if they can explore that in this country as well, or whether that can become an EU thing or whatever, because ultimately there's no benefit really to a player whose contract is out on June the 30th leaving, because he doesn't know when he's going to be playing next anyway, right? He could probably sign a new contract somewhere else, but he can't go there or do anything really. So it's very, very difficult to see how they would move on in practical terms anyway.
I don't think there's going to be any football played not behind closed doors before the end of this year. I just think it's the most sensible thing to do. And let's not forget, if you want people to stay at home, keep them in their homes by letting them watch a bit of football on the telly. You know, this could be quite important in the healing process of actually making sure that people stay at home.
Well, north of the border, they've got their house in order. Or have they? Dundee eventually voted yes to an SPFL resolution, meaning the Scottish Championship, League One and League Two will finish for the season. Dundee United have been declared champions of the Championship. Well deserved. Well done them. They were 14 points clear of Inverness Cali with 8 matches to go. So it's not too controversial, but still. They won't be dancing in the streets of Dundee because they're not allowed to. Raith Rovers are champions of League One. Cove Rangers have been crowned champions of League Two. Partick Thistle will be relegated from the Championship. Stranraer are demoted from League One. Sorry to hear that, Stranraer fans. Lots of clubs in Scotland, they wanted a resolution because they were worried about going under financially if things weren't settled. The SPFL will look into the idea of expanding the Scottish Premiership for the 2020-2021 season from 12 teams to 14 teams. I love this. Hearts chief Anne Budge will lead the chat on that. I'm sure she'll be keen to expand the league, so Hearts avoid relegation. And the Budge won't budge on that. And Stephen Gerrard said this whole situation is a complete mess. Jim, what's going on up there?
Well, all kinds of stuff, and at the same time, absolutely nothing, it would seem. I'm delighted that Anne Budge is involved.
Well, you can't say it's nothing. They've made a decision, Jim. They've made a decision. People have been crowned champions and they've been relegated. You cannot say they've done nothing, Jim. That's disrespectful to the Scottish League.
Nothing has happened, though, is it? Everyone's sat at home. We're all sat at home. I have to say, I'm delighted to hear that Hearts chief is called Anne Budge. It's just a great name, isn't it? It's just a good combination of words. I quite like the idea of expansion. Jamie O'Hara suggested the Premier League should expand to let in Leeds and whoever else. And although it's a little bit daft in a league the size of the Premier League, I think it's quite fun. But I think in Scotland, that's actually quite a good solution because, you know, there are fewer teams in the league. So I think that would probably be something that comes with its own complications, but I think it would possibly be the fairest way to do it on poor old Hearts. I know you would probably agree with me on that, Marcus. The Corgi boys stand exactly where they are.
I think it goes back to the earlier points. Whatever is decided will not keep everybody happy.
Yeah.
And I think Rangers are very concerned that Celtic will be given their ninth league title in a row. Although, to be honest with you, if I was in the Rangers camp, I might think to myself, Celtic are going to win it anyway. So it's probably better this way. So we can always go, well, you were given that one. You didn't earn it.
But is there an issue here that, because, I mean, just to go back onto Pete's suggested solution, read the Premier League earlier, and I'm not saying it's a bad solution. Obviously, there's nothing perfect here. But one of the reasons that Scotland have done this, as far as I understand it, is because a lot of the clubs in the lower divisions really rely on this prize money, right? They need this money to come to the club to help shore up the coffers. And so I think it throws into focus the problem perhaps with Pete's idea, which is just that it's very difficult to know how these clubs are going to survive if we extend season out across two seasons, which is something that I was talking about weeks ago because the Italian head of the Italian FA suggested it. But then you've got situations like this where Scottish clubs need the money, they need the prize money, they can't wait till August or September to finish the competition because they're not going to be able to survive. And then you've got places in France where in France the broadcaster is withdrawing the final tranche of broadcaster money because there's no football being played. So it's really difficult to understand how they could have done anything else if the clubs are going to them, knocking their door down, saying, look, we need a conclusion to this because we need the money that's due to us. So it's really, really tough. And I think expansion into the top division could be interesting, chiefly because it kind of limits people being punished for something that really is no fault of their own. Now, I know you can say with Hearts, well, they've been absolute dog shit all season, and you could probably say with Norwich will probably be relegated if things carried on as they were, but the fact is they haven't been. So can we think of a way of limiting what would be construed as unfair punishments for clubs, yet rewarding other teams? I don't know the answer to that, but maybe we'll have to.
Well, perhaps, Luke, we will come up with the solution in the break. See you in a moment, everybody.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Welcome back to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. Luke, what's going on over at the Patreon?
Yeah, patreon.com/footballrambledaily. Very exciting scenes as in teams of three, we decided upon our best Premier League 11 of the 21st century. It was controversial. It was, in some ways, quite difficult trying to get any selection past Pete Donaldson, but we got there in the end, and it was very, very enjoyable. So those two episodes are only available to Patreon subscribers. You can become a Patreon subscriber for as little as $5 a month. Get yourself over there, patreon.com/footballrambledaily. As I was saying on social media earlier this week, there have been 7 pieces of extra content alone this month on the Patreon. So if you're stuck for something to do, or you want to listen to something when you're out on the run or going for a walk or pottering around the garden or whatever, go to patreon.com/footballrambledaily. There's plenty of extra content there.
Lovely old job. And now it's time for emails with PDD.
You email show at footballrambledaily.com. And now PDD's reading it out. Well done.
It is time for emails with PED. Hello to Liam on the emails. Cheers for all the entertainment during the lockdown. He says, was it ever in doubt? He's appended a link. I click on the link. Galatasaray head coach has beaten coronavirus. Fighterum, of course.
Of course he has.
Because he is clearly unbeatable.
Because he beats people up in kebab shops.
Exactly. Daniel Blitmore says, greetings once again, gents. You may remember you read out my email a few years back when I utilised the Makaleli role to potty train my boy. Well, gentlemen of the Ramble, I have an update for you, and you may remember from my email that part of the reason that we were in a rush to potty train the boy was that my wife was pregnant with twins and we wanted it done and dusted before the chaos ensued. The twins are now 2 and a half, and considering I'm in lockdown and have some time to play with, this seemed like an opportune time to employ my Makaleli-esque sniffing out of danger and lightning quick reactions to potty train them both. Boy, did I underestimate this game. Currently, I feel like Michael Carrick in the Champions League final, hopelessly trying to lay a glove on Iniesta and Xavi and being made to look distinctly average. I get touched tight to twin one. I look around and twin two is pissing on the sofa. I switch my attention to twin two, get myself in a good position between him and the leather footstool, and twin one has curled one out in his pants and then sat on the carpeted bottom step. My wife and I can't go two on two as she's busy doing schoolwork with the older two. I can't sub in some extra personnel to bolster the midfield, for example, one of the in-laws, because we're in lockdown. I am, in the words of Marcus Speller, getting gubbed at this moment in time. If we view today as half-time and I'm currently in the changing rooms, head in hands, shocked at the beating I have taken in the first half, I'm looking at how I am going to turn the tide in the second half. My option is to take one of them out, not with a flying footer, but by putting one of them in nappies until I have better control of the game. Although this seems workable, this could lead to a long second half. The other option is to, in effect, retreat, wave a big white flag and concentrate on a better performance next season. Either way, the game's not going how I wanted. I'll update you in a few days, or week, or months. Who knows? Dan Blakemore, excellently written email. Thank you very much for getting
email of the year for me.
Well played, sir.
Oh, dear.
Great stuff.
I hope this is some sort of comfort to your ordeal.
Indeed. And also Jack Durrant wants us to introduce, you know, like wrestlers come into the ring to their own music. They think that the pop of a footballer's entrance music would be fantastic once football returns to really zhuzh up the match day experience, especially if we're in a situation where there's no crowd in the actual arena. Why not have individual footballers' entrance music? I'm more than up for that. We should figure out
particularly if they're a substitute. That'd be brilliant. If they're a sub, you don't know who's coming on because you can't get quite see the board or whatever, or the camera doesn't show it. Play the music. And I think I would add the added caveat as well that they all have to record their music themselves.
Right, okay.
Imagine the pop, though, if it's a big player coming back from injury in like a derby or something. It'd be incredible.
Retirement,
Who's coming on? Today is going to be the day. It's Leighton Baines. Leighton Baines is coming on.
Bainesy.
Or Crouchy. That is the end of the emails. If you want to get in touch with the show, shortfootballrambledaily.com.
Lovely old job. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Time Tunnel. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I chose this week's Time Tunnel. I'm going to take you all back to the end of October 2012. This Ramble episode was called A Literal Mickey Mouse Club. And that title came from somebody emailing in a story being told where they were at Disneyland. And they were staying at the hotel on site. And during mealtimes, Mickey Mouse would often interrupt Din Din's, much to the excitement of the children. And one evening, Mickey said that he had a famous friend with him. And they were thinking, oh, blimey, this could be quite something. It'd be sort of a Hollywood A-lister or something like that. And the famous friend, it turned out to be, was ex-Crystal Palace midfielder Simon Rodger, much to the disappointment of lots of American children. I'll be honest with you, I had to look up Simon Rodger as well.
I feel that's very harsh on Simon Rodgers. He's been stitched up by Mickey Mouse there.
And also, I think he needs to deserve a bit more respect. He was there for 11 seasons. Absolute stalwart of the club.
Yeah, I know. It's an absolute disgrace.
Marcus, can I just give you credit for this Time Tunnel episode? So this is from 2012, isn't it?
Yes.
And back in the day, we were a lot more lax when it came to things like, you know, your normal work things like writing a synopsis. And when... And when I did my last episode for Time Tunnel, I thought, I'm not doing an episode that hasn't got a synopsis because that's just ridiculous. But this one doesn't actually have one. It just says, it's ramble time again. Strap yourselves in. So lazy.
There you go.
It was. Well, I think we began the podcast by talking about the recent Merseyside derby where Everton came back from 2-0 down. But the big story was Luis Suarez. He scored the second. The first goal was given, I think, as an own goal, although he would claim it, understandably so. And when he celebrated, he ran and did. And when I say a dive, I don't mean a dive like a Jurgen Klinsmann dive. I mean like a sort of a, is it called the dead fish celebration on FIFA? We sort of run and you jump with your hands down by your side and land on your sort of side of your shoulder. And he did that in front of the opposition bench. And David Moyes got up and walked out and has said a few choice words because he was being accused, Suarez, as being a diver. And Moyes' daughter said that after the game that she was surprised her dad didn't punch him in the face.
Oh, I remember that. Where's that come from?
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it, given, you know, what we've heard David Moyes say to female journalists, that he's, you know, he doesn't mind threatening people with giving them with a little bit of a slap. So perhaps that was a little peek behind the Moyes curtain before we were aware of that sort of thing. We spoke about Luis Suarez quite a bit in that show as well, and we were talking about various kind of aspects of his game, shall we say. And I think in this game as well, he might have raked his studs down Sylvain Distan's leg, like on the sly, and gotten away with it. And you kind of forget that he used to do those nasty little things as well.
Well, the whole thing. It was a great Merseyside derby. It was also a great game between Chelsea and Manchester United at Stamford Bridge, which Manchester United won 3-2, and Chelsea had two men sent off.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
There's a situation where Torres, this is the thing. So in that game, and this is not the game at Stamford Bridge between Chelsea and Man United where the guy was spotted brushing his teeth behind the bench. Oh. That was 2009. This was 2012, as we've already said. This show came out 30th, I think 30th of October, 2012. But Torres gets sent off for two yellows, and the second one is a dive, and it was a dive.
Oh, it was a slight bit of contact.
Yeah, but I still think it, for me, rude, for me, Clive, it was still a dive. But anyway, completely irrespective of that, the first yellow he gets is a dictionary definition red by any stretch of the imagination. He basically sticks his studs into a Man United player's chest at full pelt. There's no way you should have stayed on the pitch for that anyway. So it was very lucky to be on the pitch in the first place.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Elsewhere in the Premier League that weekend, Manchester City beat Swansea 1-0, which was, I don't know if that still is, but it certainly was at the time, the longest match in Premier League history. 102 minutes, 12 minutes added on. I can't remember why. Who cares? And Arsenal beat QPR 1-0 with a controversial goal, because he was definitely offside, from Mikel Arteta, Jim, the man who's currently in charge.
It feels, obviously, Mikel Arteta is a very young manager and is defined by his youth in his current role. And also, he's not aged even a moment since this time. But it does feel weird to hear a story about the manager scoring a winner fairly recently, within the lifetime of our podcast, even.
It was a goal that would live long in the memory as well, Jim. He sort of bundled it in from a yard from a ridiculously offside position.
Love it.
Deep in injury time.
Pre-VAR, the tyranny of VAR, which I was always against.
Emmanuel Aboué, ex-Arsenal, of course, around this time, tweeted this from his account. Time to sleep. Hey, Chelsea fans, speak to me when you get your heads out of Terry's dirty ass. Your heads must be so full of shit now.
I can't believe I've forgotten this.
Jim, that's amazing because that fits into that. You guys know what I mean. That fits perfectly into the bracket of people speaking English as a second language and having no idea about the weight of the swear words they're using.
Yes.
So he's using it in a really fun, friendly way, but it actually sounds quite harsh.
Yes.
Your heads must be full of so much shit now. Yeah, deary me.
Also, Marcus, in that just going to say very quickly in that episode, we covered Lionel Messi scoring his 300th career goal. And I just wanted to point out that it's sad to see how much he's taken his foot off the gas since then.
Yeah,
it was 8 years ago.
So in his first seven seasons, he scored 300 goals or whatever. He's now got 638. It's just absolutely unreal.
Well, speaking of goal scoring, there was a little English lad well, a big English lad down under, scoring the goals around that time as well. Emil Heskey playing for Newcastle Jets. He scored a couple against Melbourne Victory. And this was at a time when there was a thing called Heskey Cam, where you press the red button and you could track Emil's movements.
This is so exciting. It's so endearing, chiefly because they're so excited that Emil Heskey's there, that they've put a Heskey Cam on him, which people were watching. And then in response, as to, you know, in a way to kind of pay them back, Heskey scores an overhead kick on Heskey Cam.
It's amazing. It's great. Has anyone checked that Heskey Cam was ever turned off?
We could maybe what's he doing now?
Still tune into it now and see what he's just up doing to the in isolation.
Oh, there we are. So that was Time Tunnel for this week, ladies and gentlemen. And now it's time for the Masked Winger.
Who's under there, under the mask? Let's see if we can figure it out. Who's under there, under the mask? Let's see if we can figure it out. It's the Masked Winger.
It is time for the Masked Winger / Going for Glold / Jermaine's Jigsaw. Just enjoy it, guys.
JJ's Jigsaw.
JJ's Jigsaw. Thank you very much to Thomas Cluett, which is a fantastic second name for what is a mystery football game, I guess. Very enjoyable. First clue, lads, get ready. I need your name. But more importantly, I need the name of the player. I was born on the 18th of May, 1978. My clubs include Real Madrid, Monaco, and Shanghai SIPG.
Marcus. Fernando Morientes.
It's not Fernando Morientes.
Oh, I thought he had it then.
Great, great shout, Marcus. Yeah.
Jim. Have 18...
Fernando Hierro.
No, it isn't. I have 89 caps for my country, scoring 5 goals.
Marcus, Miguel Salgado.
It's not.
Carry on.
Oh, are we going? You're not going to have a go? Okay.
I didn't say the name.
I have won the Premier League, La Liga, and UEFA European Championship.
Psst. Marcus. Gabriel Heinze.
It's not Gabriel Heinze.
Oh, God. These are some great guesses from you, Spelman. Mm.
I was signed by Chelsea for the fee of $27 million.
Luke. Claude Makélélé.
It's not Claude Makélélé, no.
Marcus. I forget his first name. It could be Alfonso.
Oh, I think I know it.
Del Horno?
Not Del Horno, no.
Luke. Oh, I can't. I've got to wait for the next clue.
No, you've got to wait for me to begin. You have to wait for me to begin the next clue. I was named in UEFA's team.
Is it Michael Essien?
It's not Michael Essien, no.
Oh.
I was signed by Chelsea for the fee of $27 million. I was named in UEFA's team of the year in 2004.
Jim.
2004.
See, Carvalho.
Oh, I think it is.
It is Ricardo Carvalho. Yes. Congratulations, Jim.
Well played, Jim.
Jimmy.
It's the first one for a while, big man, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. I needed that. I felt like that was a towering header from a corner and like a wave of relief has just overtaken me.
Yeah. Good for you. Well played.
Wayne Rooney was, of course, the last clue about him stamping on me.
On his
Thank
balls.
You very much, Tom, for that. Great.
Cheers,
stuff.
Tom.
Well done, Tomo. Well done, Cluesy. Well, there we are. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of today's preview show. A little reminder that we shall be watching the Arsenal Stadium mystery for Pete's Film Club.
Oh,
on
God, I forgot
Monday.
About that.
Yeah, no, it should be a good one.
It's a good film.
It'll be a lot better than the last one, ladies and gentlemen, no matter what it's like. There we are. Thank you very much, Luke.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
Cheers.
Thank you very much, Petey.
Thank you, bye.
And it's goodbye from me.
This was a Stakhanov production.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.